Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, this is Fred Film Radio. You are listening to the daily program Global Critics Venice Voice from the Venice Film Festival. We are in Venice and it's 6 o'clock. I'm Rita Di Santo. I'll be hosting the program. And tonight with me, I have a very splendid colleagues. I have Daniel that has been here before.
Hi, I'm Daniel Kotenschulte from Germany. Nice to be here again.
And Lee Marshall.
Hi, Lee Marshall. I'm Anglo-Italian and I write for Screen International.
And?
Hi, my name is Vladimir. I'm from Ukraine.
Great. So we will start talking about one moving competition, Italian title Io Capitano by Matteo Garrone, international title Me Captain. It's a story set in Senegal. Two young boys, Seydou and Moussa, leave their city, Dakar, for Europe. It's done with tremendous sense of tension and atmosphere. It's directed with skill and precisely shot. Have you had time to have a look at this Italian movie?
Yes, we have. Personally, I have pretty complex and ambivalent impressions about this film because Matteo Garrone is one of my favorite directors. For example, I really do love Gomorra. Maybe you've seen it. This film, I think, is kind of masterpiece in some way. This film in competition, I don't know, I didn't hate it, but I think the story is not so completed because they were introduced so many nationalities as very simple people.
Yes,
and yeah. Actually I didn't understand why this story ends in one of the most interesting moments, mm-hmm. when they came to Italy, because I think the most interesting part is their acclimatization or naturalization in Italy, and there are much more problems.
It's very interesting your point of view because you are 20 years old, almost the age. No, they are 16, I think. Lee, are they 16?
Yes, they are 16. Yeah, two boys who are 16, Senegalese boys. I think I liked the film more. In fact, I really liked the film. It's a kind of odyssey. It's an immigration odyssey. One of the interesting things about it, I think, is that we often think that these people who come to Europe are coming from absolute misery. And it's actually very careful in the first part, which is set in Dakar, in Senegal, where the boys come from, to show that they come from a quite nice house. They come from a loving family. They're surrounded by... they have enough to eat, they're surrounded, they make music, they're both musicians, especially one of them, they embark on this dangerous journey across West Africa and through the Sahara to Libya, where they're hoping to get on a boat to Italy, more out of a sense of adventure, a kind of teenage, you know, sense that we can go anywhere, we can do anything, than out of they're not refugees who are persecuted,
and they have a clear personality. One is he's a little more he has fear, and the other one is more brave.
And of course the tables are turned during the film. The one who's frightened becomes the courageous one.
But aren't that all disadvantages of the film? I mean, I was imagining Mr. Salvini in the audience, and I guess he would have liked the film very much because, you know, it gives everybody a point who says, well, they don't have political reasons to come to Europe, they just have economical reasons, although they have a very nice living, beautiful, colorful houses, little ones, but, you know, caring mothers, and who knows how they got into the money to make this journey. We're being told that they have, you know, secretly worked for half a year, you know, hiding their money away from everybody. I mean, they made enough money to go on this dangerous and really expensive trip. So this is a fairy tale story that, you know, draws the attention completely away to the reality of the fugitive or refugee crisis that we are dealing with right now. And the ending, of course, it filled the film even had to end at that point, not to get into conflict.
It's not spoiled.
But I'm not telling you what the ending is, but it had to end at that time to avoid to deal with the European community in any way and their position towards the refugees.
Actually, also, I think this story is pretty Brechtian, and we have some unreliable author instrument in this film, because you never know which is truth and which is fake, actually. Yes, we've seen some scenes with flying women and some angel which flies through the countries, but still, I reckon so many scenes in this film maybe are representing just a fantasy of this boy. Yeah, and maybe the final scene is also fake.
I think this deals with the question of cultural representation, or, you know, it's the term that's being used mostly for no reason at all, to blame Elvis because he stole from Chuck Berry. But in this case, the film pretends to be an African film. It looks like an African film, the way that the fantasy elements are included, and most of all, the way the music is used. We hear pop music, nice pop music from all over the continent, which is just placed over the action to pretend that we are having the story told from the perspective of these two African boys.
Yeah, at the beginning, it has this almost an homage to the African cinema, because it started and it has that feeling of African cinema, the way they have dialogues, the way to create the narration in an African movie. So I felt that this the attitude of the director, Amble, to also understand that it comes from another territory. So he tries best to work with the way they make movies there. And
I didn't feel that it was too much an exercise in cultural appropriation. I mean, I thought... I like the fairy tale element, and I'm not sure that Salvini would like this film at all, because if this is a film that if you showed it, you know, Salvini would like a film that when you project it in Afghanistan or Syria or Mali or Senegal, persuaded people not to make the journey. And I don't think this film necessarily persuades people not to make the journey, even though it shows horrors in Libya, which are kind of like fairy tale horrors of, you know, kind of Baba Yaga kind of torture kind of room.
Point, because you live in Italy, how do you feel that will be the reception of the audience from this?
I think, you know, unfortunately, just as with the Agnieszka Holland film that we also dealt in a very different way with the theme of immigration that we saw yesterday, I think these are films that will, unfortunately, preach to the converted. They will find the kind of audience that already agrees with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think there's much leverage there, but, you know, hopefully... I think it's a very interesting comparison between those two films. Yeah,
thank you very much. So let's move on. And we have the other movie in competition, Origin, by Ava DuVernay. My French is terrible. Have you seen the movie?
Certainly. This is a film that's almost an essay film or a documentary about a political or sociological issue. The issue is very interesting. It deals with what we usually consider racism, but the protagonist, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, has a different idea. Her word to describe what discriminated groups have to suffer refers more to the Indian system of caste. So, because of course the caste is not of racial difference than the leading class in the country, it is used as.
The book must be very interesting. It's loosely adapted from this book, Caste: The Origins of Our Discontents. Mm-hmm. I want to read the book after watching this movie.
Yeah, it's unusual in that, you know, films are very often adapted from books, but this is adapted from a non-fiction book, and it makes the author of the book its protagonist, and her
personal life is very much a part of the film as she's researching the book, and it shows the ways in which her the some personal tragedies that happened to her sort of feed into her thesis that actually the big problem in America for black people is not racism, although obviously racism is part of it, but it is the caste system. So it's something that they share with the untouchables in India, and something that they share with many other systems where there is a hierarchy that has been imposed. And actually, the maybe the most controversial part of the book and the film is that she deliberately makes a link with the Holocaust in Germany as well.
Yeah, I think it was not easy to adapt his book. In effect, I have to say that were very long 2 hours for me, honestly.
I think it was more than 2 hours.
Yeah, more than 2 hours. So anyway, we have another Italian movie that I think is the last one. Is Lupo by Giorgio Di Ritti, and was screen setting on the eve of the Second World War. We have this splendid actor Rogonski that stars as a man of nomadic ethnicity, and is called to serve in the Swiss Army to defend the border with Austria from the threat of the Nazi. And meanwhile, his two children have been taken away, and the authorities has killed his wife. This one is also quite long. It's I think almost 2 hours, 3 hours.
Yes, it's actually Italian-Swiss co-production, and it's mostly set in, as you know, in Switzerland, and it is about this scandal that really blew up in Switzerland in the 1970s and has been going on ever since. About for 30 or more than 30 years, I think almost 40 years, the children of the traveling community, sort of a kind of Rom community, they're called Yenish, were taken away from their parents because the Swiss state believed that they couldn't look after them because they were not, you know, because they were travelers. They didn't have the right to be parents, and they were taken away and forcibly adopted. And it tells this story, though, in a very strange way, because it's really the picaresque tale of one man played by Franz Rogowski, and it sort of strays away from the anger of the story of the rightful anger of the of this awful treatment of these people, to follow the life of this man for 20-25 years, and again eventually meanders a little too much, I think.
Are we allowed to speak critically because it has yet to premiere? We're not live on the air. We can speak about that.
That's fine.
Oh, okay, that's good.
We're near the end.
Okay, that's very good. So, I mean, if I may say something about the film, the acting, I think, was wonderful. But I once had a class in film writing by an American guy named Dov Simmons, who was very easy about simple recipes. And he had the idea of writing a good script by explaining us that every third or fourth page, there must be either an oh God moment or an oh shit moment. And this screenplay is full of oh gods and oh shits. Oh my God, she died? Oh my God, what's happening next? So this is really too much for me. Maybe it's adapted from a book, I don't know. Probably a very voluminous one. But anyway, I love the acting in the lead, although we can argue that there might even be a Romani actor who would actually be more appropriate to play this character. This is an issue, I think. Does it always have to be the same guy just because he's the best to play an outcast in the moment? I don't know. Used to be in the old Hollywood days, you would have Peter Lorre or these guys in the same place, so always the same. Anyway, this is my only question.
It's amazing. I was thinking, anyway, it's amazing to have 6 Italian movies in competition this year, which, as usual,
it's too
Italian
many.
Cinema.
It's too many because they're not all of the quality that they should be to be in competition. It's a festival when, as usual, I think 3 would have been perfect. There are 3 Italian films that definitely would have made the competition. There are not 6.
Oh, okay.
I think the other 3 should have been out of competition or in Horizons.
What's your favorite titles of the Italian of them among the these 6?
I think the Garrone for me.
The Garrone, and then 3. If you have to select like 3.
And there's one in Horizons which is amazing, called very, very ambitious, a little bit pretentious, a little bit too pretentious, but very, very ambitious, called Endless Sunday. Very interesting new young director called Alan Peroni, who lives on the outskirts of Rome and comes from a fairground family, a Carney family.
I was shocked also not to see female directors. Are they doing really bad? I don't know. I am asking Lee because he lives in Italy. I live in London.
I think nothing was ready from, unfortunately, we have the same handful of female directors in Italy, Alice Rovacker and a few others, and nothing was ready. So I think it was just a question of timing there. Mm.
And Daniel, your three favorites, Italian?
My favorite Italian film is actually the film that we just talked about, Lubo. I think it's a very decent film to watch, and I really enjoyed watching it. But yeah, then we have a big break, and if I look at the points that I gave, I almost had to apologize. You know, I'm giving some ratings for the Daily Festival newspaper, and actually, frankly speaking, the Liliana Cavani that didn't play in competition was probably my favorite Italian film.
And Vlado?
I agree with Daniel. My favorite one is out of competition. It's a film by Liliana Cavani, and also I really did like film Finalmente l'Alba. Yeah, I think this film.
What's the English title?
It's Finally Dawn. Okay. Yes, I like that too.
Yes, because I think this film is a very beautiful homage for whole Italian history and culture, but not so pathetic as from Sorrentino, for example. And I really did like one scene at the end with a crying girl. I think it's one of the best scenes I've seen this year. So, yeah, this is my favorite.
It's very interesting on the golden years of Cinecittà Studios and the way that there was kind of something very dark and sinister going on at the same time as all the Dolce Vita.
I mean, it's so difficult to deal with a period of Italian cinema that at that time, you know, was considered the best in the world. So, and every time I see an old Italian film, like the opening, pre-opening, Ginevra Brigida, Discovery, La Provinciale, I'm always confident that it was even better. It was even better than we thought. And the film opens with a kind of homage to this period of an invented scene that's currently being shown in a movie theater in that film at that moment. And it doesn't really match the quality at all of the cinema that it's dealing with. And this is, you know, the worst way to start a film, which is considered an homage to this wonderful period of Italian cinema.
For me, I save only Garrone. Because he has his own style, he has his way of making cinema, doing cinema. He's very coherent what he's doing, and I like at this time because he challenged something that is a story in the newspaper, especially in Italy. You have such an incredible perception of this problem. So I really love Garrone, all his work. I think he really does a really interesting, he's doing great work. All the others, for me, they have problems, but maybe the one that surprised me the most was Enea, because I didn't know this director. And I know that Luca Guadagnino is part of the production.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect movie, it's not a masterpiece, but it has something. So it's something that, yeah. It's a director that we have to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, I thought it had flashes of brilliance and other parts that weren't so great.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much. Let's have a spritz now.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.